Welcome to an excerpt of the CME activity, Biomarker-Guided Therapy for Heart Failure, Does Age Matter?, which is certified by Medscape and presented by G. Michael Felker, MD, Ileana L. Pena, MD, MPH, and James L. Januzzi, MD. Dr. Felker is an Associate Professor of Medicine and Clinical Pharmacology, Director of Heart Failure Research, Duke Clinical Research Institute, Duke University Medical Center, Durham, North Carolina. Dr. Felker has disclosed the following relevant financial relationships. He served as an advisor or consultant for BG Medicine, Critical Diagnostics, and Roche. He received grants for clinical research from BG Medicine, Critical Diagnostics, and Roche. Dr. Felker does intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Felker does not intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Pena is a professor of medicine and epidemiology and population health, Albert Einstein College of Medicine, associate chief for academic affairs, division of cardiology staff, Montefiore Einstein Center for Heart and Vascular Care, Montefiore Medical Center, Bronx, New York. Dr. Pena has disclosed the following relevant financial relationships. She served as an advisor or consultant for GE Healthcare and Novartis Pharmaceuticals Corporation. She served as a speaker or a member of a speakers bureau for Nitromed, Novartis Pharmaceuticals Corporation, and Otsuka Pharmaceutical. Dr. Pena does not intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Pena does not intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Januzzi is an Associate Professor of Medicine, Harvard Medical School, Director, Cardiac Intensive Care Unit, Massachusetts General Hospital, Boston, Massachusetts. Dr. Januzzi has disclosed the following relevant financial relationships. He served as an advisor or consultant for Critical Diagnostics and Roche. He received grants for clinical research from Critical Diagnostics, Roche, and Siemens AG. Dr. Januzzi does intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Januzzi does intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. The purpose of this activity is to update healthcare providers on the clinical use of biomarkers as a treatment strategy and recent trial data on the use of biomarkers in different populations and various age groups of patients with heart failure. This activity is supported by Roche Diagnostics. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.
Hello. I'm Michael Felker, Associate Professor of Medicine in the Division of Cardiology at Duke University School of Medicine in North Carolina. We have a very interesting and educational program for you today. For those physicians participating in this activity, please join me in a supplementary discussion on biomarker-guided heart failure therapy, Does Age Matter?, by clicking the Discuss This Case button. I would be interested in hearing your thoughts and questions around the use of biomarkers for therapeutic success in patients of different age groups. What would you do? What impact does this mean for your patients and have on your practice? This dedicated discussion will allow us to engage on better outcomes for our patients. It's my pleasure to welcome you to our program entitled Biomarker-Guided Heart Failure Therapy, Does Age Matter? I'm pleased to be joined today by my friends, first Dr. Ileana Pena, Professor of Medicine, Epidemiology, and Population Health at the Einstein College of Medicine and Montefiore Einstein Medical Center in the Bronx. Welcome, Ili.
Thank you, Mike.
And also by Jim Januzzi, Associate Professor of Medicine at Harvard and the Director of the Cardiac Intensive Care Unit at the Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston. Welcome, Jim.
Thanks, Mike.
So I think what we're going to talk about today is something that's of great value and importance to clinicians, and that is the issue of care of the elderly patient with heart failure, with a particular eye on the use of biomarkers. This is an area where often the clinician sees the patients who are enrolled in clinical trials, and they see the patients in their office, and they're not always the two are not always exactly identical. So I thought we'd start with a case just to try to emphasize that dilemma. So this is actually someone I saw recently, a 78-year-old retired university professor, comes to be evaluated for heart failure. He's got ischemic cardiomyopathy with a low EF. He's had prior revascularization. He's in, like so many of these patients, chronic atrial fibrillation, and he has, like so many of the older patients, a lot of comorbidities. He's got some CKD. He's recently had a fall and was told in the emergency department it was because his blood pressure was too low. And he comes in, he's got an NYHA class 2 to 3 symptoms. He is has a blood pressure of systolic in the 90s. He's in atrial fibrillation. He doesn't seem to have congestion on exam. And he's on what we'd call kind of a moderate amount of medical therapy. He's on a medium dose of a beta blocker, a low dose of an ACE inhibitor. His creatinine is 1.8. His K is 5. He's got an elevated NT-proBNP at about 1,800. And so the question that he had for me was, what can we do to get me feeling better? And so I think this is a classic example of what we struggle with. The person's on some heart failure therapy. They're probably not on as intense heart failure therapy as we'd like, but yet we're worried that things like hypotension, renal insufficiency, hyperkalemia might limit what we're able to do. So Ili, let's start with you. How do you approach someone like this?
I mean, this is the toughest area because, in fact, the growing prevalence of heart failure is in this population. I mean, I just looked at our visits in the ED, and we had 10,000 visits in a year, but 54% of them happen to be Medicare, so you know you're falling into that population. And there's this sense, perhaps real or perceived, that you can't maximize medicines, that you have got to stay on the low doses because you're worried that the older patient, probably what happened to this gentleman, that he passed out because his blood pressure dropped, or that they're going to get bradycardic and maybe will pass out or need a pacemaker. So everybody is so afraid. And if you think about the fact that he got to that age, he went through bypass surgery, this man has taken care of himself. Right. That you can probably cut back on those diuretics, and he may be even dehydrated at this point, which would give you some room to uptitrate the drug. So that's kind of the first thing that I try to do, is try to get them as euvolemic as I can to give me some room to go up on the meds.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. A lot of times it seems like diuretics, they get started on whatever dose they get started on, and if they have congestion, they get uptitrated, but there's often not much attention paid to titrating them down if possible. So, Jim, what do you think?
And it's a tough population, right? Although we all have pretty firm beliefs about the ability to titrate medications in this population, I think one important point to make, I think we all recognize, is that your margin for error is much finer in this population. Yeah. And so whereas we can diurese aggressively in a younger patient and add or increase an aldo blocker at the same time, sometimes in a population above age 65, 70, 75, the risk for azotemia and hyperkalemia is much higher. And so our strategy typically is to make our therapeutic interventions with careful, assiduous follow-up and make sure that we're thorough about monitoring for the downsides of therapy. But we also believe quite firmly, right, that the therapies need to be tested in these people. And the benefits, I think, are pretty likely if you can get them up titrated.
Yeah, some other tricks that I use is I stagger drugs and give them at different times of the day. Again, in a compliant patient, you can probably do that to have them take, say, their ACE inhibitor in the morning and then the beta blocker sometime midday. And that prevents those drops in blood pressure that happen like an hour after dosing.
Yeah. I mean, I think you mentioned the evidence, and this is an area where sometimes there's a little bit of disconnect between the evidence that's been generated and the patient in front of us. So there's a data that the average age of patients enrolled in chronic heart failure trials is around the late 50s or around 60. And that's, you know, often very different than the kind of epidemiology of heart failure. Look at Olmsted County, the median age, first diagnosed 77.
So, yeah, look in our practice, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge discrepancy.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what do we, you know, how do we, so what we do a lot of extrapolation. We take data that was generated in clinical trials that enrolled mostly younger patients who are probably less likely to have side effects, mm-hmm. and then we're trying to apply that data to an older population who may be a lot more complicated. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. do you think that's a barrier to clinicians, or how do we kind of get by that dilemma?
Well, I think clinicians are scared, and you don't want to get called, you know, back and told that the patient fell.
Yeah.
I think it's also a wonderful opportunity to use our other providers in this area, and that gentleman I would probably send a home nurse to.
Yeah.
And have the home nurse, you know, assess the patient again after whatever changes you make, and that can be done probably in 48, 72 hours if he qualifies. So I think it's a time for closer follow-up and maybe using our other providers a little bit more.
Yeah. What do you think of the, you know, we often talk about and the guidelines say we should titrate towards these target doses,
right,
which are derived from the clinical trials. And sometimes people come back and say, well, I don't think that's practical or possible in older populations. So what is your experience in your practice or data from other sources with regard to how successful can you be with this kind of careful approach in getting more aggressive medical therapy to be tolerated?
I think if we do it ourselves, we can do that. But we asked that same question in the Stamina Registry, which had patients taken from heart failure programs in the clinic, and we did it by random selection, and we compare the patients over 75 to the patients below 55, and you do get a lot of younger patients in the especially if you have a transplant program. And classically, not only were the percentage of patients over 75 not as likely to be on the drug period, but more likely to be on a low dose when you compare it to the clinical trial. So we thought that this was important to show that, in fact, it's happening, and it's happening even in heart failure programs. I think in our program, I've been doing this for a long time, and by working around the diuretics, I can usually sneak those medicines up, but it takes you time.
Yeah,
frequently what we found is it takes more office visits.
Yes.
And, you know, add, adjust, move the drugs around, put some things at night, right, you know, adjust the diet. I mean, there are all sorts of things that really can be tried, at least. And,
right,
you know, it's our impression, and you know, there are data from some trials that have shown that if you can achieve the doses in an elder, irrespective of that tighter margin for error, you get benefit, right? So.
Yeah. There are a lot of trials. I mean, the metoprolol succinate trial, MERIT-HF, looked at the subgroup of older patients. And, in fact, every trial that has done that shows that the older patients may even derive more benefits.
Yeah. Enhanced benefit.
Because their mortality risk is higher, their event risk is higher, and so you get a better bang for the buck.
Yeah.
But you've got to be daring to do it. And how do you convince clinicians to do that? If we could give them a number to follow, that might help.
Yeah, well, that's maybe a good transition to this issue of how biomarkers it might help generally and especially in this population, the elderly. And so the patient I described, he had an NT-proBNP of around 1,800 but didn't have evidence of clinical congestion. So, Jim, I don't know what's your impression of what that tells you. He hadn't been in the hospital other than this fall. He was kind of chronically symptomatic, but not someone who'd previously had a lot of events. But what do you think that tells you about the risk moving forward?
So as far as risk is concerned, we know that there's a rise in the potential for an adverse outcome associated with an elevated NT-proBNP above a threshold of around 1,000. But to be clear, it's a linear risk. So the closer to 1,000 we get, the lower the risk. And so someone at 1,750, that's a relatively modest elevation. And what that says is it puts him right in that group of patients in whom dropping the diuretic and titrating the neurohormonal agents may very well be a logical strategy. You know, in point of fact, when you look at natriuretic peptides, one of the issues with them is that as we get older alone, we see higher concentrations. And so, you know, recognizing that the effect of age and all the added things that come along with age can affect the natriuretic peptide system is something we definitely keep in mind when we look at patients.
And renal function. Too.
Renal function can definitely do it. But beyond that fact, we well recognize that they're useful for diagnosis. We recommend this an age stratified approach, which, okay, you know, as a person gets older, we use a higher upper reference limit, and it works quite well in that setting. It reduces the so-called false positive effect. And then prognostically speaking, we see comparable prognostic value of the natriuretic peptides in elders with heart failure. So the markers, you know, seem to open a window, if you will, into the biology of the disease in people across all age groups. And the real question is whether a strategy for treatment guided with a parallel goal to reduce the natriuretic peptide in these patients is going to be superior.
Now, how do you get that through to your partners to join you in a strategy like this, where clinicians are free spirits and want to do their own thing and practice by their own experience?
Well, the first point is there's some nihilism about utilizing markers to guide heart failure management in elders based on the results of some of the clinical trials that have examined this question. And this speaks to this issue of, you know, understanding why they may have been negative for the elder. And I think part of it is it's all about the intervention, you know. It's how you approach the patient and what you do for the patient to try to achieve that natriuretic peptide lowering that really predicts the benefit from the approach. So I would point out that, you know, for example, in TIME-CHF, in battle-scarred, it was hard to see a difference between the strategy applied for younger patients and the strategy applied for older patients. In our recent study, the PROTECT study, we randomized patients to a biomarker-guided approach versus standard management, and in fact found exactly what you said you'd expect from something that...
We didn't exclude any elderly patients.
We did not exclude elderly patients, and we approached the elderly patients the way we'd approach an elderly patient, and then we added biomarker-guided care. And we didn't lock ourselves into treating the elders exactly the same way as younger patients. And as you said, the higher-risk patients, i.e. the elderly patients, were actually more benefited by the biomarker-guided approach than the younger patients.
So this is an interesting contrast between some of the earlier trials like Battle-Scarred and TIME-CHF, which at least suggested that this strategy might not work in older people, and what we saw in PROTECT. So do you think that's a difference in strategy, a difference in population? What do you think explains that discordance?
It's a great question. Population-wise, Battle-Scarred had patients with heart failure with preserved EF, and that's a thorny population to manage, no matter how you look at it, whether they're old, young, or otherwise. The approach that we took in PROTECT differed, I think, from other trials, however, which is to say that the older patients in PROTECT were seen more frequently than the younger patients, so we definitely approached them the way we sort of talked about in the beginning, which is we said, okay, you know, we're going to take this patient more slowly. We may have seen patients in the office and not made any therapy adjustments just to monitor their response to therapy and say, okay, maybe we should move things around a little bit. But here's the interesting thing, and I think this explains the result more than anything else, is when you look at the intended natriuretic peptide lowering in the biomarker-guided arm in PROTECT, in the elderly, we actually reduced natriuretic peptides in the biomarker-guided arm, whereas in the standard of care arm, they rose. So this is very consistent with what we saw in Battle-Scarred and in TIME, which is that the biomarker-guided elders in both of those trials, there was no suppression in the unblinded arm, and they didn't see any benefit. We saw suppression of natriuretic peptide accompanied by benefit. So it's really about getting that intended natriuretic peptide
lower. So was there a difference in the drug therapy for the group that was not followed?
Great question. And in fact, it paralleled exactly what, you know, we see in our practice, which is to say that at entry to the study, older patients were less likely to be taking beta blockers, ACE inhibitors, aldo blockers, etc. But by the end of the study, we closed that gap such that with careful uptitration, we were able to get the elders on a medical program that's essentially superimposable to the younger patients. And so that, to me, says that it's possible, but it takes time.
Yeah. It takes time.
And was the biomarker drop the amount? So the outcome benefit was there, but did you notice the same drop in biomarker levels with treatment in the elderly compared to the younger patients?
Maybe even more. Yeah. Maybe even slightly more, because they came in higher. Yeah. You know, so older folks typically came in at higher concentrations, and in the NT-proBNP arm across the board, the relative reduction was the same, but because they came in higher, the absolute reduction was greater.
So maybe what we need to talk about, too, is percent reduction as opposed to saying we're going to reduce it to this exact level, to take into consideration the elderly and maybe the women and the obese and the patients with a little bit renal dysfunction, to say should we lower it 25%, 30%, and guide ourselves out in some sort of strategy.
So yeah, that I mean, I think this, it's an interesting question that's been a lot of debate in this kind of biomarker world, is are we looking at a percent reduction or are we looking at an absolute reduction? The challenge of some of these percent reduction strategies is that when you have patients with very high levels, you can often reduce them by a given percent, but still leave them with a level that still everybody thinks is. It's kind of like a hemoglobin A1C. You know, if you had somebody with a hemoglobin A1C of 12, nobody would say, well, we've reduced it by 25% and it's now 9, so everything must be okay. But I think it is a real challenge in these elderly patients who are going to be more sensitive to the side effects potentially of medicines. There's also a lot of polypharmacy in the elderly that maybe create challenges.
Yeah, you know, the comorbidity issue, you raised that point in the beginning. I mean, if you look at Time CHF, for example, their explanation beyond the differences in terms of how the patients were managed was that their population had considerable comorbidity.
Yeah.
And, you know, layering that complexity definitely can make it challenging from a pharmacologic standpoint.
And using so many drugs, I also worry in the elderly that if they have arthritic components that they may be taking non-steroidals, which is interfering with the diuretic, and so the diuretics get bumped up to try to overcome it when all that needs to be done is removal of the non-steroidal.
And I think kind of dizziness and falls and that sort of aspect can often be a real challenge because there's so many things that could be, you know, like this patient went to the emergency room, he had fallen, you know, there's a tendency in medicine to say that other person's, what they're doing has caused the problem, say your cardiologist gave you too many blood pressure medicines.
That's exactly right.
Could have been VT, for all we know, right?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Could have just tripped. So, and you know, I think, Ilya, you mentioned this, and it's a very powerful kind of psychological thing for physicians. You don't want to be the one to do something that's going to cause a side effect or a complication. I think we all feel very bad when we think that something we've done has caused the patient to have a problem. So I think
also think of the busy practitioner now that, you know, has 8 to 10 minutes to see a patient and they have a waiting room full of people and they don't want to get all these calls at night that says, you know, I'm a little lightheaded, I'm a little dizzy, or I don't think I'm urinating enough. And they avoid that. So giving a minimum amount will not bring me that phone call.
Yeah.
And it sounds terribly, you know, fatalistic, but that's what happens.
Yeah. So back to this patient. So if based on what we've talked about, so he's got an NT-proBNP of 1750. Seems like somebody, based on the PROTECT data at least, who'd be kind of, you know, possible to try to implement some sort of guided strategy. We know that level is associated with risk. So how would you all approach this? Would you you talked about dropping his diuretics, maybe trying to up titrate. Would you go for his beta blocker or his ACE inhibitor first?
Well, I noticed that you had him on lisinopril once a day, so a good choice may be to, first of all, I would drop the diuretic in half, have him weigh himself like we normally do, and then give him a lisinopril dose in the evening so that in fact he would be on it BID and start with that.
Yeah.
It's not a lot, but it may tell you where he's going. His K was 5, but his creatinine was 1.8. So you wonder, too, if he had been overdiuresed at some point.
Yeah. And how often, Jim, in your experience, if you're going to make some changes, how quickly would you get the person back to reassess them, and then would you plan to recheck the natriuretic peptide level at that same visit if you were doing this sort of guided approach?
Yeah, no more than 2 weeks in an elder, you know. So I'd say in about the 2 week mark, I'd bring them back for a recheck of their electrolytes, BUN, creatinine.
And that's where a home nurse can help you.
Absolutely.
You know, draw the bloods for you.
Home nursing, you can get the result even before you see them in the office.
Yeah.
You know, for a younger patient, we tend to give a little more leeway in terms of follow-up. With the older patients, we would bring them back. We did a lot of the splitting the lisinopril, a little at night, a little in the morning, and PROTECT. And, you know, we refer them for exercise therapy frequently.
That's
when they had marginal blood pressure.
You knew the way to Ileana's heart by mentioning
right, exactly. Well, I had to ingratiate
that.
Myself with you, too. But, you know, I mean, it was one of the things we sent a lot of our elders to, because they had little blood pressure to work with. We got the twofer of exercise therapy for them and more constant monitoring.
That's one of the benefits of rehab is the eyes on the patient more frequently.
Yeah. So I would agree that I'd probably start by splitting and separating the ACE inhibitor dose, and then You know, he's right in that range where he's ripe for the picking. Pretty much any therapy of benefit here will probably bring his numbers in better, you know, sort of line. So increasing the carvedilol, for example, would probably be my target with him. Although, you know, the issue there, of course, with marginal blood pressures, the blocker dilator effects of carvedilol, statistically speaking, we didn't see a larger number of patients in PROTECT treated with metoprolol succinate. But often my style with patients with marginal blood pressure is to use, you know,
because it has less blood pressure effect.
That's what I do.
So we might modulate them over to that, for
example. What about spironolactone? His K was 5. What would you do?
Yeah, lower the diuretic and then we'll talk. You know, I mean, I think that the benefits are so powerful that it's worth a relook. And if you had given us a wide QRS, I absolutely would think about CRT.
Definitely.
In an elder, you know, the data are pretty clear. There's rather impressive benefit of CRT.
Yeah.
And so if eligible, that's another thing.
Yeah.
And then one more point about diet. You don't know how this person is eating. Are they using salt substitutes, which are potassium salts?
Right.
So a little extra lesson on potassium-containing foods, if that's what you're worried about.
Make a big
with
difference.
His K at 5.1, I'd be a little hesitant to go up on the spirono, even though the ACE inhibitor may also kick up
exactly.
his potassium.
It'll be interesting moving forward. You know, there's development of a lot of interest in ways of antagonizing the mineralocorticoid system that don't cause hyperkalemia, or potassium binders, and a lot of other interesting ways moving forward we might attack this high potassium that frequently kind of stands in the way of what we want to do.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about natriuretic peptides, and just here for the last couple of minutes, you know, there's a lot of emerging biomarkers, ST2, galectin 3, GDF15, there's a whole alphabet soup
troponins.
Of all these things, old markers like troponin or uric acid. So what do we know about kind of these emerging markers in the elderly, and do those play a role potentially in how we make decisions about patients like this?
Well, it's early. You know, I think we need more data regarding the second line marker, so to speak. You know, markers like ST2 or galectin, highly sensitive troponin, GDF, where they fit in remains to be elucidated. But on a sort of basic level, we know that as patients get older, much in the way the natriuretic peptides are higher, we see an upward bias exactly with these other markers, so much so that, you know, for example, in population studies, we've looked at each of these markers, and they're all predictive of bad outcomes when they're elevated in an elderly population, but the expected values are surprisingly higher in general populations of older folks. So the highly sensitive troponins, for example, we talk about the 99th percentile of a healthy population. Well, the healthy population in question is not
They're not 78 years old.
Right on, exactly. Yeah. So many elders are above that threshold, and yet in studies, epidemiologic studies, including one that we did at the Framingham, these markers, highly sensitive troponin, GDF, and ST2, while higher in older patients, powerfully predict adverse outcome.
It's interesting, the troponin story, you know, used to be a marker that we were so focused in really sick people who are having heart attacks or maybe acute heart failure.
Time
now the data is moving more and more. There's a lot of very interesting data about screening populations. You know, data from Framingham and other data sets, and basically, free living well populations, and how it relates to subsequent risks.
It'd be a time for registries, and we've discussed this before. Yeah. Registries that will capture the cohort of a population, you know, like Olmsted County did for theirs.
So definitely a lot of interesting things moving forward, and I really think this is a critical area for further research. And
absolutely,
the focus is on the elderly. I think this is a problem that people are aware of. They've made some progress, but still a huge problem of underrepresentation in our clinical trials and lack of data.
Great time for good clinical trials to continue.
So at this time, I'd like to close. I want to thank you both for joining me. It was
Pleasure.
A great discussion. As a reminder for the physician audience, please join me in a supplementary discussion on biomarker-guided heart failure therapy, Does Age Matter, by clicking the Discuss This Case button now. I'm interested in hearing your thoughts and questions around this topic on the use of biomarkers for therapeutic success. Join the discussion now.
Thank you for listening to this excerpt of the CME Activity, Biomarker-Guided Therapy for Heart Failure, Does Age Matter? To participate in the CME Activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.